one podcast, mining the Magic the Gathering community for salt. This is the Howling Salt Mine.
It's the Howling Salt Mine. The Howling Salt Mine.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Howling Salt Mine podcast. The podcast where we delve into those salty, salty minds of the Magic the Gathering community, find the saltiest stories, the saltiest posts that you love, put them in the minecart, and bring them right back up to you. Our dear prospectors at home, that's you listening right now. You are our dear prospectors.
It's you.
I feel like that started at a low level and just built as you got into it. All of a sudden, you're like, you know what? Yeah, I want to be in the fucking mine today. Like, let's go.
I'm fucking in the zone right now.
Yeah.
And as always, I'm your host, Sam. And I'm joined, of course, with my two lovely, beautiful co-hosts, Michael and Anthony.
Oh. I don't mind, but it's new.
You have to tell us to say, hey, guys. We don't know to do it if you don't tell us.
Sorry, I was drinking a beer. Say, hey, guys.
What up?
Hello.
Hello, indeed. And before we go any further into the mine, that's right, I fucking remembered this time. I think lately I've been remembering more than I'm not remembering.
Totally not edited in.
Yeah. Don't say that. Then they think I did edit it
in. Yeah, now I've got them. Now I've got them not knowing what's what, where's where, when is when.
Well, of course, we got to shout out our nice patrons. That's what I'm talking about. That's this critical step we must go through before we can enter the mine. It's really like a kind of like a toll booth on the way into the mine where we have to shout out the patrons. And this week we have Alex Balix, Cream Bean, Hephaestus Bolts, Prime Speaker Florian, Yef Judge, Accidental TPK, Big Dog Royal Flood, Digimans, and Dr. Black.
Hell yeah.
Nice.
He's got to throw in the big dog, man. I feel like Flood is like 3 for 3 in the last few episodes of me saying big dog. I just can't stop. It's the funniest thing. If people haven't seen the big dog meme where it's Tiger Woods just with like the most emotionless look on his face, about to dap up somebody, and he's just saying like big dog, like some dude's handing him like a water or something, and he's about to like dap him up. It's so good, man. There's something about it. It just hits. And Flood
just
got some sleeves
about it
that have like the big dog meme on them, and gave us each one. And you know, it was the meme of the Chicago con for sure.
That is hyper true.
It's the meme of the month. It's the meme of the month right now.
It's gonna be the meme until we find another one.
Yep.
Dude, so I've been super into ramen lately.
Like making it or like going and getting it or like what's the vibe? Tell
raw
me about
men?
It.
Making ramen. Whoa,
into
Mike.
Raw men.
Hey, can you two?
This is a family
can
show.
You two lock it down?
I get one like every 6 months, okay? There it is. There it goes. Whoosh.
But yeah, I'm making it at home. My wife and I hit up the local Asian market the other day and just fucking, dude, every time we go to the Asian market, we spend like
a lot of
$200
money.
And we spend like 3 hours there.
Yeah.
And like the prices are low.
Well, yeah.
Like $200 is a lot.
I was like, $200 there is a lot of shit.
That's like, that's cartfuls, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a
cartful. That's multiple carts.
Yeah.
And it's a massive market too. It's not just like a little mart. It's like this full ass supermarket with like an entire area in
mart?
The back.
Damn.
That just has like art supplies and like paper supplies and crazy shit like that. It's amazing.
Is this like an H Mart or is it like a local one?
It is. I think it's a local one. I'm not exactly sure the name off the top of my head.
I mean, you spent fucking 3 hours in it. I didn't think that would be a hard question, but like, here we go.
I didn't spend 3 hours looking at the fucking sign outside, Tony. I was in it. I was walking around in it.
Right. That makes sense. Makes sense.
Now I have to look it up. It's not even popping up, man. What a bummer.
Did you even go to this place? Is this place real, Sam?
It seems like you didn't.
I fucking dreamed it.
Have you checked the carbon monoxide filters in your house recently?
Hold on. Let me spin this little top and see if it falls over. Am I right, guys? That's an Inception joke.
Nice.
It's called Good Fortune Supermarket, and it's really fucking dope. If you're ever in Cranston, Rhode Island, hit it up. And
it's a really awesome show.
Yeah, and tell them Sam sent you. And they'll be like, who?
should we particularly purchase any of their salt?
I'm not ready to move on.
Okay.
Fair enough. But good effort.
Tight episode we got to do. So I'm just giving us the ramps.
I'm gonna use every little bit of time. Like, so we went and we've been getting super, super into ramen, like both making our own ramen and then getting like ramen packets. Like, I don't know if you guys have heard of Bulldog ramen. Have you heard of this?
I have. I feel like I've heard about it from you.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you have.
Likely.
So Bulldog ramen, or fire chicken ramen as it is called, is like this super heavy spiced ramen dish. And this company makes these like ramen packets, and they have like slightly different flavors and stuff. Like, there's one that is like a carbonara and it's like cheesy. It's got like a cheese powder. There's like a kimchi one that's got some like dried kimchi flakes in it. But for the most part, you could boil down every single one of these ramen packets to be ramen. And this fucking like evil, like so dark red, it's almost black sauce that is just like fucking lava in your gut. And it's one of those heats that is like addicting to eat. Like you have it and you want to have more and more and more. Mm-hmm. But it does fuck up your guts,
yeah,
like crazy. And for me, a tender bellied boy, ooh, baby,
unpleasant.
It is unpleasant, and I can't stop eating it. It is pleasant to eat, unpleasant to digest.
When you have ramen and make ramen, do you like thick nudes or you like thin nudes?
Whoa, Tony.
I go back and forth. For the most part, I am a thinner noodle guy. We will also buy just like packages of dried ramen noodles. And sometimes you get those like crinkly pucks that look like, you know, like mid-2000s Justin Timberlake hair. And then other times you get like the really straight noodles that are in like little bundles. And I kind of dig them both. So we've been doing that. And then our secret technique is that we get shabu meat. So meat that is like intended for shabu, like hot pot.
Yeah.
It already comes thinly sliced and frozen. And you basically just have this big like container of it. And you can just pluck off a bunch of rolls of it and chuck it in your ramen when it's done cooking. And then it's just like instant protein added to your ramen and it tastes great.
It cooks right away. So thin.
Exactly. Because it cooks like almost immediately. So, man, I've just been living that ramen life. It's fucking great. A little bok choy in there.
I love bok choy.
You know, you got to get the veg. Got to get those thin little enoki mushrooms, dude. Oh, love it. Love it, man.
And it's a one-stop shop. You're able to get everything I assume you need for your ramen needs at, what the fuck was that place called again?
Dude, don't fucking quiz me. Good Fortune Supermarket.
Good Fortune. Hashtag sponsored, you know, like we like.
Low key, they actually have like the best produce in the fucking state, man. Like I walk through there and I'm like, where are you getting these veggies?
I mean, it's a small state, so like it's not saying much, but like it's fine.
That's why it's so shocking that it's not at the other places, because it's like, wouldn't you just... How are there more than one bok choy farms in fucking Rhode Island? You know what I
mean? Yeah.
But man, it's so good. And they also have some like really fucking wild, crazy shit. Like they have one aisle that just has like 50 different fish that are in jars with like goo. And I'm like, I want to eat these, but I want to have like a bite. I don't want to buy a whole
fish in a jar.
Yeah. Do they sell like sake too? Or is it just, I don't know. What are the rules in Rhode Island? Can you have booze in supermarkets?
No, we do not have booze in supermarkets. It's a major bummer. But you can get good sake in town for sure. And I am a sake boy. I do love some sake. Or sake, if you want to be really cool with it.
Some sake.
Y'all, I'm from the East Coast. I fucking butcher words a lot. We were just talking the other day about how I put an L into both when I say it. I don't know why I do this.
I do too.
I'm glad you do it too, Mike. Yeah. I feel like you're the only other person other than my wife that
I do feel like we both know we're wrong as well.
Yeah, I do. Both of us know that we're
both
wrong.
Both of us know. Both.
Both. My God.
Tony, you say that word.
Both.
No.
Ew. So wrong. You guys are so fucking stupid.
It's a New Jersey accent. I could barely understand you.
Yeah. I hate when both E's TB. That's both. Terrible.
Both. Ooh, both of you. It should be both.
Both. It's like you're saying doth. Doth the douche. Quoth the douche.
Yeah.
Quoth the douche.
Quoth.
A little throwback there.
Oh, man. Quoth the douche. Nevermore.
Oh, man. Well.
Well, one of the things that I do, I put salt on my food. Salt is frustration in the game.
Man, we're getting so good at that.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's really seamless when Sam does it on his own too.
that would be a sneak peek into if ever Tony and Mike were sick and we critically needed an episode and I had to record it alone, it would be the ravings of a madman.
I think it just would never be released.
Yeah, it would never happen. I would have to. That would be the Pat and Nick episode would finally come to fruition if that ever had to happen.
True. Oh man. Well, what is salt? What is this shit we're talking about?
Tony, what a great question. What a great transition. We're fucking professionals, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. Clean.
Salt is frustration in the game, as we like to say. It's an umbrella term, really. It captures a lot of different things that can happen in a Magic the Gathering game, from the small grains all the way to the full shakers. And a small grain of salt might be something like, you know, maybe somebody at the table is giving off a weird vibe. Maybe someone is a little bit terse or snippy when you're playing through your game actions. You know, you're not able to relax. You're not able to, like, have a really good time. But the game is still fine. As those grains get bigger, though, it can be something like maybe somebody is pub stomping. Maybe somebody's bringing a deck that's a little bit too strong for the table, although they're not necessarily pub stomping. Could just be kind of how the cards fall. Get it? Cards fall. Magic cards. Nice. Thanks.
Did you believe me? My laugh was a good.
Yeah, I'm going to save that laugh as a soundbite and put it in from now on whenever I have
anytime
a
you need it. Yeah.
Just anytime Tony has a bad joke. And then he's just like laughing awkwardly at his own bit.
Seeing as my jokes are always fucking funny, like it'll be fine.
That's very good. Big grains of salt or the full shakers of salt could be, you know, somebody getting like physically violent in a game. It does unfortunately happen. Throwing cards, packing up their mat really quickly, drop kicking their deck box, which when I say that, a lot of people think of like Jean-Claude Van Damme drop kicking something. I think of like a football hunter punting a football.
I think of like Anchorman and the Jack Black scene with the dog. That's sad though.
Yeah, I know that scene.
So I don't like drop kicking very much because of that.
Or the Dropkick Murphys. Send it up to Boston, way ayo. People know that song. Is it shipping out? They're shipping out. They're shipping in. It's like an importing and exporting thing.
What is happening?
I drank a Red Bull before this show.
You're zooming.
Well, let's zoom on into the mine.
There we go.
Wow, there's a good transition.
Tony,
Tony coming in. Dropping the mic.
I'm always coming in.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get into our first story here. I think we've sufficiently explained what salt is. And if you truly don't know, you will discover as we go through these salty stories. Guys, ready for our first one here?
Oh, yeah.
All right. This one comes to us from Reddit, the EDH subreddit, our old stomping grounds. And this one comes to us from our buddy Seven Tenths. So if you ever see Seven Tenths around the EDH subreddits, give them an upvote. You know the drill. Spread that goodwill. And the post is titled, "I Can't Do Politics, and I'm losing because of it. What can I do?"
Get good. Okay, next post.
See, that's what I'll insert the laugh there. I've been playing Commander for a good long while now, but I cut my teeth on 1v1 Magic. As such, I never really developed my skills beyond C player, fight player. Nowadays, when I try to play Commander, I don't know how to cut deals or even what I have to offer another player. Everything comes out awkward and in many cases too late. I'm so used to playing without any backup with just my deck and my deck's ability that I don't look to my fellow player as a resource to ally with or to exploit. I lose every game I play when there's some silver-tongued devil in the pod and I don't know what to do about it. TLDR, is there a way I can play Commander without having to worry about being bad at politics? And there's a bunch of other questions here as well. Is there a Commander variant that actively discourages manipulating and politicking other people? And is there a way to get better at doing politics? For context, I'm playing strictly casual with mid to mid high level decks, and my social group is at the same power level.
This is a cool one.
Yeah, it's a good one.
My number one recommendation is play CDH, because then there is no politics anymore. And like, legitimately, well, like,
there is
to a degree, but it's very different.
They're
you know?
More naked, right? Like the politics are more, it's more obvious in CDH when you make a deal that like
both players are only going to do that if it's truly like beneficial for them. So you're like forced into like only these deals that are like better for you basically and more even, I think, unless like weird stuff is going on.
I don't know, man. I think in the CDH there is manipulation. It's not necessarily politics, but there's like speech plays.
Definitely speech plays.
Literally speech plays. If people don't know the reference to speech plays, it's like a super early episode that we had. But like people will say things in CDH to get an opponent to use a piece of interaction or say like, I'm going to tutor for an answer. And then you get your win con because winning is an answer, you know?
Yeah.
So like that stuff still does exist, and very charismatic and confident CDH players will steamroll a pod of people who
aren't
comfortable with CDH. So sure. I think it exists in the CDH. It's just way more subtle than two people being like, hey, player one, I'm player two, let's make a deal. And
right,
then you like
right.
lay out your terms.
And then that music starts playing.
It's maybe more like classic like poker bluffing a little bit.
Yeah.
Getting someone to do something that is maybe the right call, maybe not, but you influence them to do the thing that you want them to do, kind of. But yeah, I think there are definitely ways to improve at politicking. One of the places to start is actually by kind of like slowing down on politicking, like not trying to do it too much. In any game, you really only need like one or two moments where you really actively engage with something that you need.
Mm-hmm.
Like one or two like targets that you can express are threatening, and then maybe one of the other players at the table hits it, or like a couple times where you try and like deflect a little bit. But doing that too early and too often can kind of like get you in deep water. Like the first person that's like, oh, you don't need to attack me. Like, what? Like people are going to attack you, you know? So hanging back a little bit and just checking for like one or two opportunities where like the impact would be really high of saying something or speaking up, I think is helpful.
Yeah, I think politics just in general, it's a subtle thing. And I like what you're saying there, Mike, about like dipping your toes in and kind of taking it very slow as you're getting into it. If you're playing against people who are politicking well in a game of EDH, what is that player doing? What are the terms of their deals? How are they influencing the game? And what's like the benefit? Often the best politics in EDH aren't the most overt ones. Sure, you can be like, if I take out this threat for the table, will you grant me some kind of like amnesty, some kind of deal or something like that? Obviously, deal making that is that open and obvious does happen. But the very subtle politics of like, let's say Tony plays a card that is going to fuck over Mike's deck. As an onlooker, I can be like, man, that kind of hoses your deck. Like that is subtle enough to, you know, focus Mike's attention just a little bit more onto what Tony has. You know what I mean?
And the risk is low. The risk is low of doing something like that too.
Definitely. Just kind of like musing about what you're seeing at the table a little bit and kind of being like, oh, that's kind of messing up. Like, oh, that seems like a strong thing. Or, hey, I got a removal spell. What do you guys think is the strongest thing on the table that should be dealt with? Like, I have a couple ideas, but I want to see what benefits the table the most. Like, you can earn goodwill just by doing little actions like that. So I think there's a lot of subtleties there with like what constitutes politics, and some of like the smaller speech plays can get you a lot more than just making a big deal.
But that's like you putting the effort in of like saying X, Y, or Z. And I think there's an even more subtle version of like just listening.
Yeah.
Like if you just listen to what the other players are saying and being like, that's annoying. You can be like, oh, okay, well, should I do something about that? Like looking at the opportunities that people present to you is like a good way to go about it.
Yeah.
Which is less forced. I think it's hard to do the subtlety of like dropping hints of things without becoming obvious, but just listening to the table and being like, oh, I hear that's a problem. Like anybody can just like groan when a card drops, right? We all do that. And like picking up on that and being like, okay, people, should I do something? Can be an opportunity to gain goodwill, good pay.
Yeah. Another thing that you can bring from two player into a four player is like your reaction really does matter a lot, like Tony's saying. And so, you know, there's both the reading what your opponents are doing to react, which generally people are more open to reacting in a four player format, and like checking how you're reacting to things. Like if you've totally decided to chill because it's not a two player format, you're not trying to be competitive, whatever. Like if you're reacting to everything, everyone else will kind of know what's going on as well in terms of your board. And then they don't need to make a deal with you because they know you're like shut out or something, or maybe they don't want to make a deal with you because you keep excitedly like yelping every time you draw a card.
Yeah, and even reacting with your cards is a very important skill, like when to react. So again, let's say, for example, we're playing in a four-player pod. Our buddy Nick casts something that is going to be a challenge for all of us. You know, maybe we have he puts Mogus down. We're losing two life. We have to sack a creature.
It'd be kind of rare, though, because Nick builds pretty bad decks. So it's like...
Yeah, and he almost never builds group slug decks that make us all frustrated.
Yeah, definitely.
They make you frustrated.
We definitely don't ask him to build them.
Yeah, we don't beg for him. We don't beg for that experience.
You know, in like a 1v1 format, it is in your best interest most often to remove those threats almost immediately. Like it comes down, I'm going to fucking counter that shit. It's not even going to hit the table. Or it's going to come down, and I'm just going to blow it up like very quickly so I don't lose my value.
Yeah.
In a four-player game, you may want to wait and be like, yeah, this screws me over a little bit, but how are my other opponents reacting? Is it going to fuck over them a little bit more? Because maybe Tony has a piece of removal that he's going to use. And, you know, this is less politics, but more just like listening to the table and the vibe of the table. And that's a very different animal in a four-player game, where in moments like that, you have three allies where the truce is tenuous, but you have three allies that all want to remove that. And you may see an opponent remove it before you do. I think that ties a lot into just politics in general in EDH, is like someone else may do something before you and you can sandbag and take your actions a little bit slower to get a feel for the vibe of the table before, you know, you burn that spell or something like that.
Hell yeah. What do we think about the salt rating here on this one? It's like almost not salt.
There's a hint. There's a light dusting, right? Of like, I can't politic.
Yeah, can't get the wins, you know. To me, I think it's pretty low salt. Like I love stories like this. This is really salt adjacent. I don't think there's like a lot of salt here. I think politics in general is like can be a very salty thing in EDH. And if you are seeing, like this person said, someone who's like a silver-tongued devil just running roughshod over everybody, you're like, okay, well, how do I deal with that? And honestly, dude, we didn't say this, but sometimes if somebody is super charismatic and just making deals left and right, you can be like, yeah, they're just fucking saying that to use you. You know what I mean? Like you can point call that it out. Like we do that all the time where I'll be like, let's make a deal. And Tony will be like, you're just trying to make a deal so I don't blow up your shit. And I'm like, yes, exactly.
Yeah. There is something though, like sometimes it's hard because it's just like, you're a big personality, Sam, and I'm a big personality. Thank you. Like, it's just like,
okay.
And Mike just exists.
Yeah,
so
Mike
it's
is like a tiny little mouse, you know, nibbling on pistachios.
So it's like sometimes, well, I mean, where I'm going with it is literally like, I've just got like a fucking big mouth. So I'm going to win a lot of those like interactions. So it's like hard to like overcome that. But I'd say that some of the way Mike gets around it is, he just always has answers. So like sometimes you just need to
get good approach.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's some more subtleties to that because you and I do have big mouths. Like, you know, I'll talk if I'm fucking alone in an empty room. Like we're gonna talk no matter what. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
when deals are happening and there's table talk, we're gonna have input. And often that gets you a benefit because you're talking a lot about what's happening, you're trying to push things to your favor. But sometimes that runs out and people be like, damn, Sam, you've been talking a fuck lot. I'm just going to attack you because you won't shut up. And then Mike's quieter approach is a really good one at that moment.
I think that kind of speaks to where like my first suggestion was like, just sit back, you know, like take a few things. And Sam's was like, you can influence everything a little bit if you just talk about all of it. So I totally agree. Like there's definitely, you know, everyone's going to have their own approach to it. And sometimes just not saying anything except your game actions and completely irrelevant conversation is a good way to get to like turn six without having lost any life. Mm-hmm. You know, because no one's noticing your stuff. You're not the person pointing things out who then is like, oh, but they're pointing it out, so it must matter.
Yeah.
Like sometimes just hanging back will kind of get you there, unless you're the person playing everything super, super huge and obvious. So
it's the like know thyself, like know what you're, how you would approach or typically approach the situations and then like acknowledge it and be like, how can I use this to my advantage?
Yeah.
Yeah, like as you're getting into that politicking space of EDH, like find out what's right for you, because you probably won't be the silver tongue devil at the table. Based on your post and your history with Magic, it just does not seem like where you're going to fall. So find what you're comfortable with, because when you're doing politics at the EDH table and you're uncomfortable, it's so obvious. Like it's so obvious that you're trying to force a deal in your favor. It could, because it's not natural, you know what I mean? And yeah. I think that's one of the benefits of like all of our different styles of like table talk, is that it's natural. Like it doesn't feel forced and fake when Tony and I are talking a shit ton, because that's just who we are. And it doesn't feel forced or fake when Mike is a little bit more reserved, because that's just who he is in those moments. So like that is really the thing, is like explore it, observe what other people are doing, but also find your balance, you know?
Yeah. And like we said, fucking get good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the only other thing I'd like caution against is, and I know it's just like a word choice thing, but it's like chances to ally or exploit the other people at the table. Like sometimes
yeah, none of them are your allies. You're exploiting everybody. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate the clarification.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. But like a little bit, like it's way more easy to make a deal when you're genuinely approaching as an ally than when you're like mischievously trying to exploit.
Maybe for you. But we know that's not true because Mike breaks deals.
I'm saying
don't,
I think that's
listen to anything
too.
Mike says.
And
I
you
forgot.
Guys are too coward to do it. So obviously I'm the only one that knows anything about it.
Oh, man. We have fun here, guys. We have fun at this all time. That's a good one, though. I really do like that. Oh, also, like, super quick, there is not really a commander variant that discourages manipulating politics like we talked about that.
No, there isn't.
And he also asks, is there a way you can play commander without having to worry about being bad at politics? Like, yes, you can just play and not politic.
Yeah, you can play not politic. And the one counter to politic that Sam pointed out earlier is just anytime someone's talking a lot or pointing things out or asking for deals, just say like, oh, you gotta form a deal over there. Like, sounds like so-and-so is going to benefit a lot from that. And you just point out whoever is getting the imbalanced side of that, you know?
Oh, shit. And we say this all the time, so we should say it again here. If you are trying to make a deal, make sure it is very clear what you're looking for. Because we've had a lot of stories where people are like, hey, I removed that thing for you. What do you think about that? And they're like, I think I'm going to still attack you and knock you out of the game so I can win. You know, so you really want to make sure that if you're going out of your way to get goodwill with another player, that it is like obvious, it is something you kind of point to, and you try to make some kind of deal off it. Because, you know, there's something to be said for just doing good deeds for other players at the table and getting like general goodwill, but it's not always going to be ironclad, and that can blow back on you.
Yeah.
And you'll wish that you had a better outline deal.
Yeah, just get it all in writing.
And while you do want to do really explicit deals, that's not advice to give like super complicated deals. Like, you don't want to do, you won't target me for 3 turns, and for 2 turns, you are going to try and use all your removal on that guy and X and X and X.
That like, sounds like a great deal to me. I don't know what you're saying.
It's a good deal. Yeah, it's a good deal. But like,
you like if someone will do that, like, hell yeah. Like,
you want to keep them simple and not like super complicated.
And it's a dance. Like, you're going to fuck it up a bunch.
Yeah. Dance the manse.
I can't tell you how many deals I fucked up because I don't remember them, because I make so many. Like, there are so many times where Tony and I will be like politicking, and then Nick will just be like, can you guys just fucking do something? And we're like, all right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well,
another.
All right, let's do it. This next one comes to us from our website. There's a lovely website submission. Our website, thehowlingsaltmine.com or howlingsaltmine.com. Both are going to get you there. And this one comes to us from, the username is, I could have done that differently, The Gathering. And the post is titled, Best Store Manager Ever.
Ooh.
And the story goes, so we never had an LGS where I live in Perth, Australia. And a man I'm going to call Tony.
Call him that.
Wow.
I mean, we'll see how I feel about it once we get further into it.
Yeah, right? This could be really complimentary.
Didn't we just say like LGS owner?
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Yeah, it does say best store manager ever. So we'll see. A man I'm going to call Tony opened one, and me and my play group were chuffed.
Chuffed. For a time.
I love it. Chuffed and
chuffed
cheese.
Up, mate.
So fucking chuffed right now, dude. Chuffed as fuck right now. For a time, the owner Tony was the saltiest baby, like a baby mermaid just living and breathing in the salt.
Mm.
Oh, so it is you, Tony. First time I was in a commander game with him, he was playing some Boros commander and had Sunforge out, and he said the whole deck was just instants and the only creature was his commander, so one of the other players at the table countered his commander twice in a row, and his voice went up like 5 octaves, and he started crying and saying that this isn't how Magic should be played. And if he did it again, he wouldn't be welcome in the store anymore.
Oh, no.
Another time, I walked into the store, and he was scream crying on the phone. And he hung up and fell on the floor crying. And there were like 3 other people in the store just staring at him. And after like 2 or 3 minutes, he got up, stopped crying, and informed us that the boosters for the new set had just dropped and were going to be a day late. So, so we had come to draft and we were just like, okay, man, it's all good. We'll just play normal games. Somehow a joke started going around because there were no boosters as prizes. He was going to give out hand jobs with tears.
Oh, no.
With tears for lubricant.
Oh no.
How does that somehow go around as the joke? You know, like
somehow this someone made this joke. Somehow. Who knows? Who knows that these jokes when you're one of 4 people in the store? Who knows who makes these jokes? I don't think he ever heard the joke, but then like 2 weeks later, while we were there, he just walked in and said, everybody get out, I'm broke, and the store is closing right now, which we realized might explain some of his behavior. I feel terrible for laughing at the hand job joke, but everybody had a story of his tantrums going all the way back to when the store had only just opened. Okay, so I think it's safe to say he's not the best store manager ever. And that... I think in hindsight, we could say that it is an insult that he called this person Tony.
Thank you for the clarification. I wasn't already aware about 5 seconds into the story.
Man, there's so much here.
Yeah.
I feel for LGS owners, man. It's fucking
hard.
Yeah,
it's hard out there.
It is a hard business. And kind of inherently, LGSs are sort of one of those businesses where, depending on the product that you're selling, whether you're doing like miniatures for war games like Warhammer 40K or Magic cards and things like that, it's kind of one of those businesses where like your patrons have a finite amount of purchases that they're going to make. You know what I mean? Like yeah. if I'm getting into Warhammer 40K, I'm going to buy a bunch of shit. But there's going to be a point where I have everything I need and I'm not going to buy stuff and I'm just going to show up to the store and buy like snacks. And, you know, that is still fine. Like you can still center your business model around that, but it's a challenge. Like it's hard to have that kind of business and hope for people to keep coming in. It's really one of the reasons why Magic is often the lifeblood of a store. And sometimes you can tell how good an LGS is doing by how active their Magic community is. Not always, but sometimes.
It's such a complicated business because it's not just you're selling products. You're also selling an environment so you can sell products. Like a lot of businesses, like your grocery store, you go there, you buy groceries, you leave. Like at an LGS, it has to be so many different things. So there's almost like this showmanship level of like, how am I also making sure that people are coming for Friday night game nights and like enjoying themselves? Like how am I setting it up to be successful? So you're like an event planner and a store owner and like all these different fucking things at the same time.
No, it's so true. It's so true. Like it gets thanked, but what a thankless job. Like I feel like it's such a critical thing. There's often a lot of criticism of game store owners.
Yeah. Yep.
On that note, some of the criticism of this store owner seems maybe valid. Like, not necessarily the jokes being made, but like, yeah.
And tears are a horrible lubricant. Come on. You can do better.
For sure.
The salt.
Yeah, the salt. It's like, oh, God, it's drying you out.
It's also, I can imagine, like, the margins must be so razor thin. Because even think about just TCG Player, right? Like, TCG Player is a direct competitor to, like, every fucking LGS out there. Like, if you're like, I can just buy this online for cheaper, like, why am I going to buy it here? Like, it just makes it all so much harder. You know?
Yeah, that's why people say support your local gaming store, because they really do need your support. And I think when like a gaming store does it right, it's amazing. When you have a good gaming store, it's like, this is where the crew hangs, you know? Like, I think I've talked about it a lot, but it's been a while since I mentioned it.
It's been a while.
But my friend Jared owns the Battle Standard down in East Windsor, Connecticut, and used to have an LGS up in Central Mass. And we literally would go there like 2 to 3 nights a week and just like always chill. And like the product was super good. The game space was amazing. And, you know, his store in Connecticut is like that too. We were just there constantly, man. When it's good, it's great. And when it's bad, it's pretty horrible, you know? And I think sometimes we hear these stories about LGS owners that kind of get these like pub stompy ego trip kind of thing going on. Because one of the things that can happen with an LGS is that the LGS owner is also a player at the LGS.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if you have a problem player at your LGS and they also own it.
Yeah.
Like you're going to find another LGS to go to.
Yeah.
I mean, in this one, obviously, this is just a ridiculous story. Like, I feel bad for anyone that jumps into a business and maybe doesn't have a good handle on it.
Yeah.
And like you said, Mike, those razor thin margins. And like sometimes
I actually said that. So,
wow. Okay. And like you said, Tony, those razor thin margins, like sometimes you're on one side of the line and sometimes you're on the other side. That. And it's like, oh, you did say it, Mike? Tony.
No, I said it.
And, you know, I think Nick said this, but those razor thin margins. He actually just texted me and he said that.
Those razor thin margins.
That means nothing to me. I've said it so much. Razor thin margins. But yeah, it's just a challenging thing. I mean, obviously, you're not going to foster a great environment if you're a fucking salt lord and you're bullshit is really out in the open. Like I don't mean to be cruel or anything to this person, but if you are loudly frustrated and complaining on the phone and like really putting your baggage out in the open for everybody to see, that's going to make it like an uncomfortable space to hang out and people probably aren't going to come.
Yeah. And it was a short timeline, right? Like that was my interpretation from the story. Maybe I wasn't getting it, but it's like, it wasn't open very long. Like it was the feeling I got, but.
Yeah, it seemed like it just kind of hit and closed.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Which is like, yeah, that blows. But
it do happen.
What do we think about the assault rating on this one?
Dude, so high, man. So high.
Yeah.
You know, I've talked about some LGSs that I've had bad experiences at before. I think those were in a stray grain, but I have talked about it before on the show. A little advertisement there for the Patreon tiers.
Nice.
Like I said, when it's good, it's amazing. And when it's bad, it's terrible. Everyone wants to have that amazing LGS where it's just like where everybody comes and hangs out. The meta is amazing. Everybody's playing fun decks. Everybody's warm and welcoming. The store is well stocked. It's just fun to be there. You want to spend your money there. Like you want to be a patron for that business. And when you don't have that, it sucks, dude. It's super salty. And when the store manager is yelling at you in a game, like, I don't know. There's some things that are just
yelling at you in a game and then giving you hand jobs with fucking tears, doesn't even bother to give you a little spit, you know, like what's the fucking point? What's the fucking point? Am I right?
Oh no.
You know what? I would just say no thank you. I don't even want it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, come on. Have a little dignity. Like, what's going on?
What a bold thing for you to say that you would say no thank you, Sam. What a radical concept.
Hey, you know what? Line in the sand, I would say no to that. And I'll die on that hill. Come at me. You can at me on that. No, don't actually.
Licks teeth. It's Morbin time.
Oh man, with my strawberry deodorant on. That's another deep cut from that one.
Oh my god. Should we round it out with one more?
Yeah, let's round it out here. So this last story we have comes to us from our Patreon. That is right. Patrons submit stories and we get them. So this one comes to us from our buddy Florian, Prime Speaker Florian. You know him and you love him. And the post is titled Salt and Sadness on the Stack and Not Knowing How Changing Phases Work. And the story goes, greetings, oh, great lords of the crystalline goodness. I like that.
Yeah, that's the most royal, one of the most royal we've been given, I think.
Yeah, I like that.
Lords.
Lords of the salty fiefdom.
I feel like I would be a lord, you know?
What?
You would be a lord?
What does that mean?
Yeah, like instead, not a king. Like, I feel like I like the title of lord, you know?
You're calling yourself a crony? You're a crony?
You guys suck.
Yeah.
Just finish the fucking boast. That's a good reason.
Don't even want to finish the joke. It's like, fuck you guys. Oh, man. Sam, edit in Tony's funny laugh from earlier right now. I recently had the chance to participate in a two-headed giant CDH tournament. My friend Roshan and I were rocking his Blue Farm and my Maelstrom Wanderer decks. A potent combo with lots of pressure, but lacking protection on my end. Seeing that this was a tournament with prizes, we decided to play as clean and structured as possible, communicating well and not speeding through our actions. Fast forward to the game with Team Weirdo and Whack. The nicknames are to convey their posture without exposing their names. Interesting. I wonder how they behave. The two of them were playing pretty loose and always asking for little takesies backsies. We said that this is a tournament and they will not get any, and kindly asked to think before playing. That struck a nerve, and they started to become snarky. Over the course of the first match, they garnered two strikes from the judge for slow play and illegal game actions. We called them out to the judge, adding some more salt to the soup. First big moment was us announcing wanting to move to our end step. They replied, in response, we bounce your copy of our Shieldred and his Dranith Magistrate. We had mana open, so we were fine. Still in our main phase, getting another round of priority, we recast both my clone, copying Shieldred, and the Magistrate again. They shout, "Judge!" The judge came, and they complained how we played creatures in our end step. I explained that we wanted to change phases, and they responded and bounced, thus giving us a chance to recast, and the judge agreed that we were in the right and let us continue. We'll have to talk about that in a minute, because that's a good interaction.
Yeah, yeah.
They started steaming, and we were smirking. For the final nail in the coffin, in game three, I cast a Fury with the Invoke and put it on the stack to explain that when it enters the battlefield, I get to divide four damage amongst up to four targets, which will be tripled by the Fiery Emancipation that was in play, and also adding the trigger from a Terror of the Peaks that was also in play, which will also be tripled. Their board was full of juicy targets, Dranith Magistrate and things like that. They said, in response, I will cast a Stifle, countering the ability. I called a judge and explained that there is no trigger on the stack as Fury had not resolved yet. Easy rollback, there was no legal target. With the judge still at the table, Fury resolving and putting the damage on the stack, I chose targets and announced the trigger from my Terror of the Peaks, also choosing targets. They respond with a Path to Exile instead of their Stifle, targeting the Fury. Judge, my friend, and I all let out a confused, huh? I let it resolve, we get the life gain, and started to resolve all the damage that was being tripled. They instantly turn around to the judge and say, but I exiled the Fury. He explained that the triggers are still in the stack and would resolve still dealing the damage. They said that instead they would cast the Stifle instead of the Path to Exile. And the judge warned them that we play competitive rule set and they already have two strikes and that he is not happy with their way of playing and unprofessional behavior. With the trigger still in the stack, they added lots of salt and sadness onto the stack and scooped. We could have cast Wanderer and overrun them anyways, but man, was that a weird and wacky game. In the end, we won the tournament and celebrated greatly.
Nice.
Thanks,
nice.
Florian. That's a good one.
That is a good one. There's so much to unpack.
There's a lot, dude.
Let's out of the gates just mention that a CDH double-headed giant tournament is interesting. Let's get that out there first.
Florian has been posting about this in our Discord, and it honestly sounds really, really fun. It's basically just like as comp as you can get with two-headed giant with almost CDH decks, but you make some changes to, you know,
support the format.
Yeah, for the fact that you have a two-headed giant. Like you want to put a Scheming Symmetry in your deck instead of an Imperial Seal and shit like that. So it's a pretty interesting take.
Yeah.
It seems like a fun way to play competitively.
I feel like you just play Baral, Rafik, and win. Counter everything, get Rafik out on turn like four and kill
and
them.
Blast people.
Three.
And doesn't sound bad.
It doesn't sound bad at all. I mean, I think the first thing we can say is that whenever you are in a tournament setting, you need to play cleanly. Like if there's prizing on the line, people are going to catch you on that shit because they want to win. Like it kind of goes without saying, but some people still come into those high power events wanting those takebacks. And I think in our pod, we've gotten to a point where if we're playing CDH, we take the ding. You know, if we misplay, we're like, well, I misplayed. I'll get them next time, you know?
Yep.
But not a lot of people have that mentality. And I think a lot of people still want that when you're playing EDH, they still want those takebacks and that more like relaxed rule set.
Yeah, and it like becomes a pattern too. Like if you start allowing takebacks for little stuff, you sometimes you don't learn some of the things like this.
Yeah,
I feel like, and I do have some empathy for these players because honestly, they seem quite new. Like these are like truly classic rules interactions that people get wrong the first time they encounter them. But the key is like that first time, like you got to learn them after that fact. But like triggers being on the stack and it not mattering if you remove the creature that put them there.
Yeah,
that's an example of things people get wrong all the time. And the other case in this also is just like a classic blunder.
I think that's less classic actually, and I think it's like more nuanced. We should like talk about that and get into the details there.
I agree. So what we're talking about here is kind of this first infraction, which is them saying they're moving to their end step.
Oh, yeah.
And responding to the round of priority at the end of the second main phase. So if you do that, if you respond to the round of priority at the end of someone's second main phase, it actually pushes them back into the main phase. They're still in their main phase.
I want to just be careful about your language there because it's not like rolling anything back. It's
yes,
not pushing
yes.
it back into the main phase. The thing that you're responding to is the attempt to change phase into the end phase. So you're currently in the main phase. Someone says, I want to transition. And you say, no. You can't, I'm doing something. So then you never transition to the end phase. So you're still in that second main phase.
But it's priority, right? Like every single change of phase, there is a round of priority that happens.
Right.
Yeah.
And so like that just gets skipped all the time. Like people have in general, I think, gotten better about, oh, I'm going to combat or these different things because it's becoming a more natural part of the language of a turn, I think,
yeah.
where it used mm-hmm. to not be as much. But mm-hmm. like every time you leave like upkeep, there's a lot of points in a turn where there's a round of priority that in theory you're supposed to be like, you know, do you pass priority? You pass priority, you pass priority. And that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It's just like the turn just progresses. And
yeah.
this is like a scenario of that you're responding to moving to the end step and like everybody gets priority and priority is shifts back to whoever's turn.
Yeah. For the sake of the game playing smoothly, people often shortcut that, which is just
for
like
sure.
That's just like a part of how it goes. But
yeah,
the other thing that I think is really confusing about that interaction is that you can play things in people's end step. So the in response kind of verbal shortcut is like getting you. Some people think that means, oh, I'm responding to the fact that you have gone into your end step and that you're
yeah.
now in your end step. And so because you're in your end step, I'm responding. It's like, that's not actually the thing you get to respond to. The thing you get to respond to is, okay, I go to my end step and then I end my turn. And it's that like ending your turn that you get to respond to.
Is it ending the turn or is it cleanup?
Moving to cleanup.
Yeah, you don't like you
is
don't
there moving
move
to cleanup and then also a moving to end step or moving to end turn?
There is, but there's no priority in your cleanup step
yeah.
unless a trigger is put on the stack. So like
gotcha.
That ignore that unless you play Garrog.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so I guess just to like really articulate what we're talking about here, if you're responding to someone moving to the end step, you're still in the second main phase. And if you want to do some like goofy shit, like bouncing things to their hand and stuff like that, they can still just cast creatures, cast things at sorcery speed because they're still in their second main phase. You know, just the act of wanting to change phases doesn't put you in some place where only instant speed spells can exist, which is unlike the end step, where when you're in the end step, you can only cast things at instant speed. So I think there's like a subtlety there that a lot of people can get wrong sometimes. And like Mike said, usually you get burned by it once or twice. And then you're like, okay, I know better now. I'm going to wait until they're in the end step. Maybe there's an end step trigger you can respond to, or you just wait for that priority when they're passing to go to the end of their turn and you respond there. But that is just one of those blunders where you're like, especially when you think you're being fucking sneaky and you're like, ooh, I'm going to bounce your shit. And they're like, all right, recast it. Like that is,
yeah.
That is always, it feels so fucking bad when you fuck up your timing doing that shit. But I do think that that's like kind of like you were saying, Tony, sort of like a lesser known thing because so much gets shortcutted and so many people treat that round of priority when you're trying to pass out of your second main as a similar or very close step to, you know, reacting on the end step.
I think that is harder for even experienced Magic players. Like
yeah.
there's definitely a lot of subtlety around those pieces where because of the nature of how we play games, and like Mike is saying, like it's to make it smooth, like yeah. make gameplay smooth, like that just sort of happens and gets skipped over, and in a lot of times people don't maybe even know what it is that they were trying to do,
yeah.
because obviously those players like wanted them to not have the ability to recast creatures and do all those things. So it's like that was like a genuine mistake that is like I think made by a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think sometimes when you have the interaction in hand to cause some kind of big blowout or some sort of big move, you get a little antsy and you jump maybe at the wrong opportunity to cast that stuff. You know, it's weird because like Two-Headed Giant CDH is more like a 1v1 format than it is like mm-hmm. a four-player format.
Right.
And in a four-player format, you may be able to say, like we were just talking about politics and table talk, you might be able to say, hey, other two players, I have a bounce spell in hand to get rid of the shit that's on Tony's board. When is the best time for me to cast that? And they'll say, get to the end step, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. you can't really do that in 1v1. Your opponent's not going to be like, oh, this is the best opportunity to fuck me over.
No, but your teammate might. It's tough that they both didn't know that.
Yeah.
I think that is an easy mistake to make, but I think players that are aware of it and cautious of it will usually get it right and use it during the end step. Like usually it's kind of in a response to someone saying like, okay, I pass turn. That's yeah. when you're like in their end step if they're trying to pass turn. But they really showed their hand then by not knowing how the Fury interaction was going to work, right? Like,
yeah,
this one is like, oh, maybe they're like somewhat experienced and kind of know what's going on and are like trying to be weird to get this advantage by getting the judge over or something. Once they're messing up the trigger interaction, I feel like it's like, I just start to feel kind of bad for them for not knowing how some of these rules work.
Yeah, I think that's a tough one because that is something that genuinely happens to a lot of people. You know, we see this happen with Thassa's Oracle all the time. It's the whole reason why Thassa's Oracle doesn't lose to a Path to Exile, you know, because the trigger still resolves. And I think when you first come up against the Thassa's Oracle Demonic Consultation win, many players have this moment where they pause and they're like, what is the moment that I'm supposed to interact here?
Mm-hmm,
and, yeah. you know, that's when that table talk can really kind of come in and save you. But if you and your partner in a Two-Headed Giant game don't have that understanding of like the triggers and stuff, you're just going to make misplays. Like it was really just a matter of time before they made this misplay if they didn't have that understanding.
But it happens, and because that happened, they won't do it again, which is the important thing.
Yeah.
Once you like have it happen, you learn and you realize. Because I remember like in the very early days of CDH, somebody played a stupid fucking Thoracle, and I was like, gotcha, bitch. And you're like, okay, and the trigger resolves. And I was like, what? I was just like, that's fucking bullshit. That's how that works. And you're like, yep. And I was like, cool, I'll just go fuck myself. Like, whatever.
I think that's why people hate Thoracle so much.
Yeah, yeah, because everyone's had that experience.
It's a creature bullshit. Combo. I was playing like fucking Anya.
You like hard cast a fucking Doomblade or something.
No, I think I cast like fucking Fire Covenant and paid a bunch of life and like did the whole thing. And then I was like, fucking gotcha, bitch. And they're like, nah, it still happens, bro. And I'm like, all right. Fucking sick. Really cool combo. I'm really impressed. Man.
Dude.
Anyway,
yeah.
What do we think about the salt rating on this one?
Dude, I mean, this is a fucking salty story. These guys fucked up over and over again.
Yeah.
Got on the bad side of the judge, which is pretty fucking bad.
Yeah, which makes it harder to feel bad for them because I'm like, all right, well, come on, guys. Like the judge is telling you, like they were probably not being like good sports about
it.
Yeah,
totally.
Florian did say earlier that there was like some illegal game actions and stuff that happened. So, and they were just kind of playing sloppy anyways. But like, I don't know. I feel for them a little bit. But at the same time, like if you've already misplayed and asked for a take back, and then later on you misplay again and ask for another take back, it's like the take back isn't gonna suddenly manifest and come to you. You know what I mean? Like you've burned through the goodwill. You need to
need
to fucking buckle down and lock in and play clean.
And I'm pretty like if a spell has resolved, you cannot take that back. Like
yes.
Like for me, that is usually how it goes, unless there's like they're totally new and like didn't understand how something happened and nothing else has really changed. But like in this type of a setting, like it resolved. What, are you going to rewind it and then stifle instead? Like put a different thing on the stack, like to like get the fuck out. Like
that's way too far.
I don't even fucking like blue, but like, it's not my fault you didn't stifle it. Like,
yeah, that's like being like, actually, can I attack a different player? Because I didn't want my creatures to get blocked and die. It's like, yeah. You can't fucking do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, high salt, super high salt. And then they fucking scooped, like, I don't know, man. But it's like, yeah, the sloppy play. I see it. Like, I feel for them, but also at the same time, I would have done the same exact thing that Florian did.
Yeah. Well, is that time of the fucking week, Sam?
Ooh, Tony, let me check my abacus.
That's not for telling time.
Do abacuses tell time? That's for math. Let me check my hypergeometric calculator. Yeah.
Are you counting days for the week?
Yeah, I count minutes with my abacus. I'm very busy with flipping beads on the abacus, dude.
That makes sense.
And there aren't enough for the day, really. So it's not a good system. I don't know why I'm doing this. But yeah, I do think it is that time of the week, Tony. It's the time of the week that comes every week.
Every fucking week, baby.
It's the time of the week where we say, Mike.
Mike.
What's the salty card of the week?
The salty card of the week this week is...
Salty player. Kuskusay. Salt. 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 Better. Scoop, 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 scoop. Scoop, scoop. You're bored. Oh.
Oh, nice.
That was... That's Psycho Killer by Talking Heads, if you didn't know, for my perfect rendition. And this was requested by our patron Flying Ninja Squirrels. And I just want to shout out Flying Ninja Squirrels because they also requested Barbie Girl by Aqua and just discovered, because I'm incredibly organized and I definitely have all this stuff written down, that not only did I let down Flood when I couldn't finish that song, but I also let down Flying Ninja Squirrels. sorry. You know, I have to have a few imperfections.
Well,
just a few is like, you know, putting in a... Anyway, what's the salty card, Mike?
the salty card...
What were you going to say?
The salty card of the week this week is what that statement got met with, which is deafening silence.
Not when I edit it in post and put Tony's laugh in.
Yeah, good luck.
Deafening silence.
Deafening
man,
silence.
Fuck this card.
Tony hating on a non-blue card. It is one white for an enchantment. Each player can't cast more than one non-creature spell each turn. Tony, how do you feel about it? Tell me how you really feel.
I really don't like this fucking card.
Mm.
Mostly because, like, it... I usually only see in CDH, it's usually only fucking Sam, and it's usually really not so bad for me at first, but then I can't win.
It's usually fucking me?
I hate you.
Fucking Sam.
It's usually because I'm playing Sam. In Sisse.
Yeah, I do play it in my Sisse list. It's true.
I hate these effects because it's like, they wind up coming down, and like nobody remembers after two or three turns.
Yeah. Bingo.
And like it kind of goes by and everybody plays like a thing, and like it almost doesn't get established. Oh, even though it's clearly on the board, like everybody just forgets, and then they start trying to do other things, and then they like forget, especially with these ones where it's like you can play multiple creatures but you can't play like other things. And so it's just like, it's hard to track when you can't do something without just being overly vigilant in Magic, especially like over webcam, which is, I think, how most people play these days. But even when it's like on the board sitting over there next to me, I can't tell you the number of times one of these kinds of effects are out and like five turns later, we're like, up, we all played things that we couldn't fucking play. So this game is just moot now. Like, doesn't fucking matter.
This game is scuffed as fuck.
Yeah. But I just fucking hate sex, so...
Yeah, you do. And Sam?
I like Deafening Silence. I mean, this isn't surprising anybody.
Yeah, because he's a fucking gross Stax player.
Because I do have a soft spot for Stax, and this is one of the Stax pieces that I love. I'm not really seeing people play this in casual, but I think as far as rule of law effects go, things that are limiting the number of spells people can cast in a turn, Deafening Silence is probably one of the better ones to run in a casual game, because people can still play their commander, they can still play creatures. You can really, because of that, you're probably playing two or more spells a turn, so it's not like a hard rule of law that's only putting you down to one. I will say, lately I have not been as high on it in CDH, and I think it's because there's a prevalence of creature decks right now. So sometimes playing a Deafening Silence will just enable the other creature deck at the table, which does make me salty because I'm like, oh, I fucked up. And you don't realize that you fucked up and played the wrong stacks piece usually until like two or three turns later.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very hard thing to gauge when is the right moment to play it. I think the thing that really gets me salty is what Tony was saying, is how it disrupts clean play if you forget about it.
Yeah.
Especially when it's coming down in a deck that isn't like a hardcore stacks deck like Sisay or even Selvala. You know, if it came down, I think you have it in your Selvala deck, Tony.
I do not.
Okay. But either way, like when it comes down in a deck that's not focused around stacks, I think that those kind of conditional stacks effects are easier to lose track of and forget. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where it leads to like a mechanical take back that you just can't get around, because it's like, well, I'll cast my other spell, and everyone has to say like, well, you can't. So you're like, well, okay, well, I just revealed that I have this in my hand, and we have to rewind it,
which is the correct solution for that too. Like, you just exactly. Gotta rewind it. The judge would say so.
That like misplay aspect of it is frustrating. What about you, Mike? What do you think about it?
I mean, I love this card. I think this card is great. I think it's very interesting. Like, I've said it once, I'll say it a million times. I like cards with simple rules text that drastically alter how the game gets played. And this hits that like on the head. It's also a one drop, which is crazy. Like, it's such a big effect. It's such an impactful effect on a one drop card. And
such a fucking Sisay player. This is why he's like gushing over it right now.
Yes. Yeah. I just think it's interesting because even in CDH, even in creature decks, oftentimes it's like one non-creature spell that you're going for that is going to set up the win. Like in Selvala, right? It's like you're playing Umbral Mantle or you're playing a tutor or something and you're trying to set it up. Same with Sisay, like playing a tutor or playing some like one thing. And it just means that you don't get to do that with protection up. Like, nobody gets to go for non-creature card win and have a counter spell up or something else. So it makes this really weird sort of like exposed thing. And you're not too worried about that until you're like about to go for a win attempt. And then you realize like, oh, this extra counter spell I've been so happy about holding on to, like I can't use it for what I really want to use it for unless I deal with that Deafening Silence. So I just think that's a really neat dynamic. And I don't play Breach in any of my decks, so I don't care about Deafening Silence.
Nice. The truth comes out.
I do love those moments when you're like tracking what everyone's done and you're like, you cast an instant, you cast a non-creature spell, and you cast an instant. I'm going to fucking cast Agnos right now. And no one can stop me. This is great.
Yeah.
Where does it sit on the list?
Wouldn't you like to know?
I would.
Take a little rightsy downsy guess.
I have mine. I have mine prepared.
Do, 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 do.
Oh, no. Do,
do, do. Is me singing the Jeopardy song helping you, or?
Sounds like Tony's coming from it.
No, you'll fucking know. Gosh.
All right.
Coming
flip
from
em.
A fucking.
What are your guesses?
Ear-based hand job. 61.
61. Mine's 145.
Sam wins it again.
Fuck.
Yay, yay.
It is 157.
Yeah. Whoa. I was close, dude.
Wow. Sam was pretty close.
See, I thought it was close to Winota, but just a little bit saltier because it's such an obvious stacks piece. But I see it being a little bit below Winota. That's fair.
Yeah.
I think I'm just letting my own salt.
You don't give the rating that you think it is. You just give your rating of how salty it makes you.
I was like, this shit's got to be in the top hundo. Like,
yeah. I love it, man.
Well, thanks for playing. That's the salty card of the week.
Thanks, Mike. That is a good salty card. And thank you to all our listeners out there, and of course a special thanks to our Salt Packet Plus tier members. You know, we got to shout them out. And this week we have Thoughtimus Prime, Rothbox, Bathroom Entity, Bobo Fett, Brandon Mousecop, Chameleon, Captain Kraz, Clearbrook, D. Beeson, Doug's Dad, Bark Bark, Firehawk Ash, Eves, Joe Danson, Pez, and Vok. Thank you so much for your support, y'all. We really, really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, thank you to all the other prospectors out there and the support that you provide us every single week, just tuning in and listening to the show. It really does mean a lot. If you want more Howling Salt Mine and you want to hang out with us just a little bit more every single week, check out our Patreon. Patreon.com/Howling Salt Mine. We have our Extra Salt series, new episodes that we're putting out every single month. It's been a while since I... It has been some time
since I... It's been a while.
It's been a while. It has been some time since I tallied up the
hours. It's been some time.
It's been some time since I could. But I think that we're at like 17 or 18 hours of extra content there in the Extra Salt series.
Yeah.
Probably a little bit, maybe closer to 20 at this point. And then we're around the same ballpark with our Stray Grains. I think we have almost 60 Stray Grains now, maybe more. And that is our short form content. All of the little tangents that don't make it into the show. Did you like the peanut butter and jelly sandwich bit from the last episode? That was actually like 15 minutes long. And we had to cut a lot of it out of the show. So if you want to hear
that long,
maybe 10 minutes, I might be embellishing. But if you want to hear that full director's
all
cut
its glory,
the PB&J bit, that is where you will find it, in the Stray Grains. We also have a really thriving Discord community. We have Patreon game nights. We're actually fucking logging off and jumping into that game night in like 2 minutes here.
Literally two minutes.
And, see you soon. And it's just a great time. So come and check it out. Another way that you can support the show is to buy our merchandise. First and foremost, we got to mention Jank Mats. They're fantastic playmats that they're printing. That is the only place that you can get branded Howling Salt Mine playmats. We've got one design up there right now, just the podcast logo, and definitely have more to come. And you know me, I'm a little arty boy. I'm going to be doing arts and putting them up there. So there's going to be more and more that come out this year. So keep an eye on that. You can also get our fantastic t-shirts and all the fun designs that we have there on our Bonfire store. All the links for this stuff are in the show notes. Another way you can help out the show is to give us a 5-star review in your favorite podcast app of choice, whether that's Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It helps us stick out in the algorithm. It shows Spotify and Apple Podcasts that we're doing a good job, and then they suggest the show to more people. So that's actually one of the best ways you can help out the show. It's almost like retweeting us on Twitter or something like that. It's a way to just give us a little bit of a nudge, a little bit of a boost in the right direction within the greater algorithm. And finally, the last way to help us out is to send us your salty stories. If we haven't made that evident lately, we need your salty stories to keep the show going. And you can send that to us at our website that I mentioned earlier, or send it to our Gmail, which is thehowlingsaltmine@gmail.com. Give us a title, give us a username. You know the stuff that we read on the show. You know the vibe that we're going for. So hit that and send us your salt. And lastly, you know we got to shout them out every single episode. Our good buddy, Devin Burnett. If you're ever in Asheville, North Carolina, hit him up and get a tattoo. He's the dude responsible for our awesome podcast art, and he's a really cool guy.
10,000 subscribers are bust.
Indeed. Well, thanks everybody. As always, stay salty, and don't forget to draw an additional card during your draw step.
It's the Howling Salt Mine.
No, we have an hour and 10 minutes. Exactly how much time we need. Let's go.
Please, we got an hour and 15 minutes, baby. 2 minutes to poop and pee after.
You're vastly overestimating how quickly I can poop.
Start now!
We're fucking professionals, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. Clean.
As Tony giggles into his echoey now sheet.
Nice. I just want to give him a little extra spice, you know? It'll be good for the bloop.
It sounds like you crawled into like a little cave and were like...
Crawled into a little cat.
I was going to say a little cavern. But I caught myself because I made a word mistake and you guys would jump on it.
Got him.
And then big grains of... Big grains of salt.
Grains of salt.
Guys.
Grains of salt.
I made a word mistake.
The fuck are you guys looking at right now?
Successful.
I said successful. Okay.
What the fuck is wrong with the tape, Sam?
You bowl to be sex successful. So you're like,
that's an interesting LGS, man.
Both of you guys suck.
Both of us heard it.
Both of us heard that shit.
Whatever. Anyway.